You're listening to Around Comics, episode 127. Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic book roundtable, where twice a week you'll hear a revolving panel of guests discuss everything in and around the world of comics and graphic novels. On every Thursday episode, like this one, you'll hear either topic discussions, a creator interview, Comics 101, or creator spotlights. Today we're talking with one of the most prolific writers in comics today, Mr. Greg Rucka. I'm Christopher Niesman, and let me introduce you to the rest of today's panel. As always, I'm joined by Mr. Brian Salazar.
Hello.
Mr. Scotty Young.
What's up?
And Mr. Tom Caters.
Welcome to RuckaCast.
Oh, Susquito.
I'm so excited.
Susquito.
That is a unknown Star Wars character.
Susquito, general.
Out of episode one.
Admiral Susquito.
I've been saying that for weeks, and I just found out where it came from.
Where?
My neighbors, when we play Uno on Saturday nights out in the back porch, Uno nights, because I'm awesome.
Uno master.
Anytime they lay down like a, you know,
Uno
like a draw four card.
Uh-huh.
Like, they say Susquito?
They go, oh, Susquito. And I was like, so we started saying it, and I said, finally, I was like, you know, I keep saying this. Now I'm saying it everywhere. Where did this come from? And I guess it's from My Name is Earl, which I don't watch, actually, but there's a character on there that always says, oh, snap. And I guess she gets, like, trapped in Mexico or something, and somebody convinces her that that's how you say snap. So she gets in, a bind or something, and she goes, oh, Susquito. And it's what's her name, Presley.
Jamie Presley.
Jamie Presley, which is
the hottest woman on TV.
The hottest woman on TV, and forever will play...
White
like
trash.
A trailer trash.
Yeah. She does well.
She won't be doing any like Shakespeare unless it's like a white trash.
She's like a Romeo. Oh, Susquito.
She's like a classically trained ballerina, and yeah. That's how she. That was her
a white trash ballerina.
No, I don't think she's white trash at all. Like, you know, I don't think she's
trip over them hubcaps.
Her actual heritage.
Does she study everything?
Is she good?
No,
at
everything?
How is she at a tire tossing?
I don't know.
Or a good old beanbag.
No, I read it. It was an article with her. I don't remember.
And people.
They had cool. It had awesome pictures of her and like. In like a unitard thing though, but that's all I remember. Yeah, that's why I remember it.
I read in an article.
I read the article.
Well, before we talk to Greg, I want to let everyone know that this episode of Around Comics is sponsored by InStockTrades.com.
Waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All the great discounted prices, and remember that all orders over $50 ship for free. Whether you're buying an absolute edition or catching up with showcases and essentials, InStockTrades.com is your new best friend.
I have spent so much money at InStockTrades, it's not even funny.
Have you?
Like, at a criminal amount of money.
Did you meet Cameron last week at Wizard World?
What?
You should have seen the bling that he was wearing.
The what?
It's he gave us love Scotty Young.
Did it?
Scotty Young's been spending so much money.
Yeah. Scotty Young bought me this necklace. Yeah,
I enjoy how...
You're working for InStockTrades, not Marvel.
I enjoy what a hard time we have saying the word essential.
Yeah.
Essentials.
He gave us a free pen. Check it out.
Yeah, those are great pens. Yeah,
little InStockTrades.
An audio show.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can all...
take a picture of it.
I like the hand cramp I'll have after using that little nail. Yeah.
Well, you can also get great pens at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. And Around Comics is recorded here every Friday at 7 o'clock. And it's located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago.
I've also spent a criminal amount of money at this store.
On pens? Oh.
At this store.
You see all the bling that Mark's wearing? It says, I love Scotty.
Dark Tower
Comics and Collectibles.
He's tall. But with all the money he spent, he got leg extensions.
New legs.
So anyway, if you're in Chicago on a Friday night and you'd like to come by and meet the crew, you're certainly welcome. We actually have a couple people in here tonight.
We probably won't talk to you.
Yeah.
No. We're too busy. We got a show to put on.
We got stuff to do.
Yeah. We got...
All right. Well, I tell you what. Let's move on here. Greg Rucka has made a career of writing for multiple entertainment mediums. He's worked as a novelist, a comic book writer, a video game scripter, and an executive producer. Rucka has put his stamp on some of the most iconic characters in comics, including DC's Trinity and Marvel's Wolverine.
Who the hell's Trinity?
That would be Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. He has written all three
That's
of
like
them.
Like some Jesus shit.
The Holy Trinity.
Rucka's independent works include such titles as Queen and Country, the upcoming Stumptown, and Whiteout, which has been adapted for release as a major motion picture starring Kate Beckinsale.
Hot.
Yes.
Very hot.
Hot.
And we're going to hear all about that.
Yeah.
All
about I have a funny serendipity story. The first, I bought it very quick. I bought a DVD player in college, and I didn't know how to hook it up properly, so we watched Serendipity, but we could only watch it in black and white. And it turns out it's like the most colorful movie of all time.
It's like watching Pleasantville.
I know, exactly. It was not very good without color. Yeah. And then I saw it with color, and I'm like, well,
Can I add a funny DVD story? When
yes.
Gangs of New York came out,
I rented it,
and I put in, it was two discs. Yeah. It's such a long goddamn movie, and I put a disc in, and I watched it, and I got to the end, and I'm like, God, that was a weird movie.
Where
it didn't make any
go?
Sense.
Where is the city?
Because I watched the second disc from the beginning, halfway through the movie on.
Think of the first.
And I'm like, this
is
the strangest
film.
Did
you off until the end?
No, I didn't even get it until I
but
popped it out of the DVD player.
You know what is
and
very telling? That's how bad that movie was.
Well,
is you could start in the middle.
The book is fantastic.
Yeah.
The book is fantastic.
You could start in the middle and get to the end.
Did Greg Rucka write that?
No.
I don't think so.
Greg doesn't write
book.
Anything that sucks. Oh, okay.
Book.
Greg doesn't write anything that sucks.
How dare you?
Let's ask him.
Disparage.
Well, we will. And I tell you what, let's ask him right now, because Around Comics is happy to welcome back to the program Mr. Greg Rucka. Well, Greg, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming back on with us.
It's nice to be back. It's been a while.
It's since New York. I saw you. Yeah, which I think just before or as the New York Con was going on, they were doing filming in Montreal for Whiteout, which I think is probably a good place to start. You were getting ready to head out there. What was the experience of being on set for a movie that was based on your graphic novel like?
I wish I could come up with like the best way to describe it. And I guess the way to do it would be, if you've ever imagined something and it was so complete in your head, and you had all the details, and there were details there that you saw in your mind's eye that you never ever spoke about. They're the details that you assume, right? If I tell you it's a dining room, you guys are all going to go, okay, so there's a table and there are chairs and there's cutlery and you know what I mean? You fill in everything else. I walked onto the set for Amundsen Scott, for the South Pole base, which they mm-hmm. built, this huge set. And I turn and I look, and on the wall is a placard. It's got a map of the base. In case of emergency, right? These are your exits, and then it's got a list of what you do, right? If there's a fire, step one, activate nearest comm system. Two, announce Mayday, Mayday, Mayday three times.
I have one of those at my base.
and I kind of that was the moment where apparently I started grinning and I just couldn't stop for like the next day and a half. It was amazing. It was amazing, and the first moment coming in. We were met at the studio by the assistant for a guy, David Gambino, the producer, basically on the ground, who was this great guy. And his assistant came out to lead me in. And we go in to the soundstage in between shots, right, the red light's off. And we enter, and it's all dark, and they're pumping all the smoke into the set because they want the interior of the set that they're on, or they're pumping smoke onto the stage because they want the smoke in the set to give, the set the appropriate smoky atmosphere. And the set they've built, this is the first set I see, is Vostok, right? It's the Russian base that's built in, the 50s. It's a Cold War era base. that has pretty much been abandoned by the Russians since, you know, the Cold War ended, because why do they? They got money to spend on this. And I come around the edge of the set, and I'm walking into the video village, right, which is, you know, the director sits there with these monitors and the headsets, and there's the, you know, the assistant director. Everybody's running around there. That's where all the seats are. And as I come around, Beckinsale walks out of the set, right? They've just completed the shot. And she comes out, and she's wearing, you know, the big wool pants and a shirt that's quite tight, you know, thermal.
I have a similar
right
now.
She's got a big Russian fur hat, you know. And I had my jaw was on the floor. I was like, oh my God, because I, you know, she's pretty. she's even prettier in person, if you can believe it.
Wow. No, I
mean, like, however beautiful one may think she is, seeing her on screen is next to nothing as to seeing her in real life. It is, there's a line used to describe Grace Kelly as freakishly beautiful. And so the first thing I see is, you know, Beckinsale, and I go, homie. Christ, you know. And then the second thing I do is go, oh my God, she's got Carrie's hair. I mean, she's wearing, her hair has been done to look like Stetko, and in the comic. And I think from that point on, I was like, well, we're golden.
I was going to ask you that. How does she translate? Because, you know, Carrie was definitely, I think in the book, someone that was attractive. But, I mean, she had her pimples, so to speak. Did Kate Beckinsale, do you feel like she nailed that role?
They were
role?
Hot pimples.
They were hot.
Well, I think Beckinsale did a wonderful job. I haven't seen the final cut. You know, they're still assembling right now. But all of the performers. And there wasn't a weak link. And, you know, the fact is, and again, you look at somebody like Kate Beckinsale, well, freakishly beautiful. Turns out she also can act. You know, and then, you know, Tom Skerritt, there's a scene that, you know, they have a couple scenes together that are just going to, I think they're just going to be fantastic when people see these things. Columbus Short, who plays Delphi, I honestly feel probably steals just about every scene he's in. Gabriel Macht, who's playing Price, you know, and I guess has been cast to play the Spirit, you know, for Miller's Spirit movie, which should tell you everything you need to know about Gabriel Macht right there. You know, they're just all, these guys are all firing on all cylinders.
I've heard that Tom Skerritt is freakishly handsome in person.
No, Tom Skerritt has, he's got guns, man. But seriously, he's got to be in his late 70s, and you do not want to piss him off. This is no question, he'll send you through a wall.
Nice.
Was like there my dad?
was there some part of you that kind of didn't really believe that it was real until you got on set and you sort of was able to see all the, you know, recreations of these things from the book?
It wasn't that I didn't believe it was real. What happened, and they played a dirty trick on me, because I actually went up twice. The first time I went up for my quote unquote official visit, because I'm an executive producer on the film. Which meant basically they had to let me come see shooting. You know, that's the whole reason we pushed for it, really. So, you know, we got the nice tour. I was only up there for like 3 days. And then Dominic Sena, right, the director, and who, you know, really is invested in the material and knows the material. You know, he told me he'd been chasing the project for 10 years. And that every time he'd, you know, go, hey, is this available? Somebody else would have had it. So when he heard it came up, with Silver, he chased it down. He wanted to do it. He made the mistake of saying, you know, you want to come back. So I got back to Portland and I saw Steve, you know, and I was like, we have to go. You have to see this. You have to see this. We have to go back. So we went back, and I'm there for like 2 days, 3 days, and Gambino turns to me on the third day. We're watching something being shot, and I've been trying really hard to keep my mouth shut, you know, because I didn't want to chime in. I actually had made some comment about something. Gambino gets out of Video Village, and he's holding the sides, right, which are the script pages for the day. He's been going over them and going over them, and he looks here, he says, come here. And I'm like, oh, God. I said, I blew it. You know, they're gonna drag me out and shoot me now. They said, so I'm going to call your agency. How would you feel about staying on and helping us till the end of the shoot?
Wow.
And I said, but I yeah, that'd be okay. Yeah.
I've got comic books to write.
So I got to stay through the end of shooting, which was like another 3 weeks. And that was the dirty trick, because before, right, I could go up and I could see everything they were doing, and I could still, you know, I didn't have to invest in it, right? Because, well, we did the graphic novel, now they're making a movie. They're going to make the movie the way they're going to make the movie. I acknowledge from the start that a movie, by definition, can't be the comic book. It's going to be different.
Sure.
So, you know, whatever they do, I'm going to be cool with it. And then they gave me a job. It was like, you bastards. So, now I have to care. You made it, so now I have to care. So, you know, I mean, at the end, I'm pleased with everything so far. Cutting it together, I saw some of what he'd cut together about 2 weeks ago. I was down in L.A., and he showed me one scene, and I don't want to say what the scene was, but it was a scene that I'd seen in dailies, and I thought was really, really well done, and he pretty much just finished putting his final touches on it, and it's amazing. I think it's gonna, I really think it's gonna bring the house down. And it is, it's one of these scenes, like I was talking about in San Diego, that we couldn't have done in the comic. It just wasn't gonna work in, on the comic page. But, man, it's incredible. So.
How hard was it to initially, like, not, you know, try to get more involved with it?
Very easy. I didn't want anything to do with it, man.
and then they made that executive producer tag actually mean something. It sounds,
yeah, they,
like,
really did, actually. And that was one of Gambino's lines. He said, I'm going to make you earn it.
Wow. Nice. No.
But, well, I mean, you know, I don't know how to, and I've said this before, but, you know, Steve and I created the comics. And that's what we set out to do. We set out to tell the story as a comic book story. We didn't set out to tell it and then hope it would be made into a movie. And when, you know, the movie sold and so on, and my agent would say, well, do you want to adapt it? My response was, hell no. I'm the worst person to adapt it. I'm too close to it. And I, you know, and I'm not going to make the right choices for a movie. So, you know, I went into it pretty much going, hey, I've had nothing to do with it. And I'd actually not read Whiteout in like 6 years before I'd gone up. And on the flight up the first time, I reread the graphic novel. And then I read the draft of the script that they had sent. And, you know, I finished reading the graphic novel going, wow, I wrote this 10 years ago, and boy, did it show. You know, I'm just seeing like every mistake I made. And then I read the draft, and I was like, this is so much better. You know, this is so much better than what I wrote.
Well, talking about adaptions from originals, I just saw the movie poster, and the adaption that they made from the Frank Miller cover is amazing. What were your thoughts on that?
That poster was done specifically for San Diego.
Okay.
That was I don't know if that's actually going to be the release poster, but yeah, they did that, and then they, you know, I don't know if anybody, if anybody from the show actually was at San Diego or saw it, they did it like a, they cut together like a 90-second trailer specifically for the San Diego audience too, and it had just enough teases, you know, that I think the diehard fans, you know, all six of them were like, oh, good, they're doing that, and so on. So.
Well, moving on with Whiteout, and you talked to us about this in New York, is with the movie coming out that you and Steve, and Steve being Steve Lieber, that you guys are going to come back and do Whiteout 3, the graphic novel. Is that going to be a graphic novel or a miniseries?
We're actually, Steve and I met with James Lucas, you know, editor-in-chief at ONI last week, and we were talking about format. And I think all of us want to do it in floppies initially, and then we'll probably trade it fairly promptly thereafter. But it goes back to sort of, you know, I mean, when we came to it the first time, we've always wanted to tell, you know, the story as comic stories, and we've always wanted to do those as best as we can. The trick here is trying to get everything, you know, handled in such a way that, because we'd be idiots if we didn't, you know, so that we can capitalize on the publicity the movie will give us. So I suspect what we'll do is we'll release each issue, you know, as a 24-page floppy, and then we'll trade promptly thereafter and try to get that in bookstores.
Is there any plans to re-release the original to or you know, do something, you know, in conjunction with the release of the film?
Mm-hmm. The first one, Whiteout, has actually been re-released in what Oni is calling a definitive edition. It's kind of, it's a smaller format. It's not quite digest. It's on much better paper stock, and then Steve actually went through it and made, like, the art corrections that he'd been killing himself over for the last 10 years. You know, so he went back in, and he was able to clean up things and see reproduction done the way he wanted it. And Melt, which, you know, the Melt Definitive Edition, I believe, comes out in a couple weeks. So both will be available, and then Oni has a publishing plan to try to get those into bookstores as well.
If you have the first two, do you have to buy the definitive version?
No.
You should say yes, Greg.
People were asking at San Diego about buying Whiteout, and I was like, if you already have it, you don't need to. And everybody I told that to went and bought it anyway.
Comic fans. You are a tricky bastard.
I was going to say, I did not know I had such powers. I will say a couple things. You know, if you own one, the definitive edition, there is actually a neat difference in, you know, I mean, the paper stock difference is such that the white in the definitives now is really crisp. And it actually adds, I think, to Steve's art in a very, very elegant way. So, but, you know, you don't need it.
Well, what's up?
Says with a wink.
Unless, a wink, wink.
unless you're a loser.
If you're a super fan.
not that any comic book fans are completists or anything.
I would never, ever call any fan out there a loser in a way that it could be attributed to me.
When is the film scheduled to release?
No idea.
Don't know yet.
No idea. They were talking about spring, and then Joel Silver had this idea, and I remember him saying this. He was like, we're going to release it in the middle of summer. It'll be the hottest time of the year. We'll release about the coldest place in the world.
That's a pretty damn good idea.
And then I heard somebody say, well, maybe the fall of 08. I think it's probably going to be spring. But
get
there's
ready
no
for winter.
It has yet.
Yes.
And are you going to be involved? I mean, of course, when it comes out, before it comes out, there's, you know, obviously going to be a big press push for it. Are you going to be involved with that at all?
Yeah, I mean, I've told them, and I'm happy to do it. Both Steve and I, you know, we're behind what they're doing. You know, we're gonna back it. We're gonna back the play. I'm happy to go out there and show for it, and I'm more than happy to do it because, like I said, everything I've seen, I'm happy with. And I did at San Diego. They did, you know, Warner Brothers had a panel on Friday where they sort of did coming attractions, Dark Castle's coming attractions, and it was in Hall H. It was like 6,500 people, and that was like my big press day. I ended up behind the scenes with, you know, Ridley Scott. You know, I was like, wow. Oh my god, talk about being out of your depth. You know, it's like, I write comics. Why am I here? And one of the things that happened, Jeff Johns informed me of this after the fact, laughing at me, by the way, was, we got up into the green room to do the panel, and we got there early, and the publicist shove us out and around and into another room, and there are like 20 people with TV cameras standing, you know, ass to nuts with 20 people with microphones, all of them on marked masking tape X's, and they put you in this line, and then they sort of work you down it in two-minute increments. So, you know, Joel goes, and then Dominic goes, and then I go, and we're soundbiting.
Give us a profile shot, Greg.
Well, who are you wearing?
It's always like, hey, we're here with Greg Rucka, and Greg calls her out, Whiteout. And, hey, Greg Rucka, Ray, Whiteout, what's Whiteout about? You know, and that. And
like
I was
speed
like, okay,
dating
well,
for comics.
Stuff will all start showing up when the movie is released. And I was dinking around on Xbox Live a couple days ago, and my Xbox Live interview is actually downloadable. No, it's there. Me, Dominic, and Joel, which was kind of appalling to see. Frankly, I was like, "What am I doing there?"
Wouldn't have worn that barrel with two straps if I knew I was.
You know, let's just say that normally I don't mind that I shave my head. The footage of me on the panel sitting next to Kate with the light like bouncing off my scalp and burning her you know, I was like, maybe should let it grow out again.
Well, I tell you, moving on, Bantam sent us a nice little gift in the mail earlier this week.
Hey, you finished it yet?
I'm
Jeez, yeah.
No, but Greg, I got a scary story.
The pages
are sticking together, though.
I pretty much only read comic books.
Oh, well, I'm taking this back because I'll read it.
No, and I've read two novels in the last 2 years, and that is A Gentleman's Game and Private Wars.
And, oh, so this will be the third. Well,
yes, and my wife walks in to the living room earlier this week, and I'm sitting on the couch, and I'm reading a book. And she goes, oh, my gosh, you're reading a book. It's not a comic book. And then she looks at the cover and sees your name, and she's like, oh, that doesn't fucking count.
You might want to write a...
It does so count.
You might want to write a book about world events so Chris knows what's going on. Otherwise, I don't think he's going to catch up on anything.
Yeah, it's bad. But yeah, it's just like, oh, him again. So you're the third person in our marriage, Greg.
Will you write a Heroes Click novel?
Well, I really do appreciate the courtesy that your wife has shown me so far, and I'm really grateful that she didn't kick me out during the honeymoon. So
this is fucking creepy.
I told you guys it wasn't.
God damn, this is a creepy motherfucker. I thought it was a one-way road.
No!
It's a circular highway, guys.
Should we leave them alone?
Yeah. Fuck. Yeah, it's afraid. But we are, of course, talking about Patriot Acts, which is the continuation of the adventures of Atticus Kodiak. And,
the most poorly named hero in all of literature.
But your name, I was commenting earlier on how awesome your last name is and how I want. Mine's like Young. I want a name like Rucka.
No, you don't. You really don't. Because, like, when you're 8 and you're on the playground, you know?
Oh,
That's motherfucker.
I know. That's why it's so sweet. I grew up in a rough place.
It's sweet once you get shoulders and you know how to throw a punch. Before then, kind of sucks.
Well, now that we have Atticus coming back to novels, is this for fans that haven't read any of the previous novels? Do they need to read those, or is this as good a place as any to jump in with his adventures?
You know, with every novel I write, you know, with the Q&C novels, with the Kodiak series, I always try to make the book as accessible as possible. But I'm a fan of serial storytelling. You know, it's one of the reasons why I love comics, because comics are serials, you know. It matters what happened 5 years ago, you know. So, yeah, you can absolutely pick up Patriot Acts and not know anything about the characters of the series. It can be your first book in the series. And I think you suffer in no real way for it, and you'll enjoy it, and I think it's a good book. If you know the series, it's a different read, because the emotional impact of some of the events, you're going to have a little more potency if you've experienced these characters before. Mm-hmm. If somebody out there is going, well, I really want to know before I pick up Patriot Acts what's been going on, I would say pick up Critical Space first. Because Patriot Acts is really a true sequel. It begins about 15 minutes after Critical Space ends.
But you don't have to unless you suck.
Unless you want to. Wink.
No, this is not me trying to sell whiteouts. This is in all sincerity. I mean, you don't have to. I think that, you know, I'm an author of a series. Mm-hmm. Would I like people to know the series when they read the latest book? I think they get a different experience out of it, yes. But I really do try to make sure that you're not obligated to know the prior work. So you should be okay if you don't know what the hell's going on coming into it.
When is the actual street date for Patriot Acts?
The street date is August 28th.
Okay, it's so next week.
Ooh, that's the same day as Aesop Rocks.
What?
There's another. I'll remember to that the release date of this now because that's good a date. That's a good date.
That's a good date.
Scotty approved.
You picked a good date.
That's a good date. That's
right. It's synchronicity there.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about you had even sort of made fun of it in the beginning about Atticus Kodiak, the name. What did you have any other names you were before you picked Atticus Kodiak that you thought maybe would work?
I had a different name. Well, the character went through iterations. You know, I actually started working on who this guy was back in college. And the first book I wrote with him, I wrote, was actually my master's thesis for my MFA. And is a book that nobody will ever read because it's bad. And then the second one I wrote about him is the first one that was published. It was Keeper. And I remember going, you know, I spent way too much time thinking of trying to come up with a name. And then once I had a name, trying to justify it, trying to be like, why would you name somebody this, you know?
And why not?
In Patriot Act, you kind of, you find out. So you, there is an explanation as to how he ends up with his name. So he actually has a brother named Holden, which should sort of dip it.
That's pretty hot.
Holden Kodiak?
Holden Kodiak.
Yep.
Interesting.
That's hot.
Now I definitely have to read it.
I always thought Atticus Kodiak sounded kind of like a porn star name.
It's, you know, I mean, like I said, if I knew now what I knew then, you know, like, yeah. Too many fricatives. I love
Tom really
puts
some
Atticus,
cement to your work.
I love what it connotes. You know, it's very, very deliberately. He is named after the character of Atticus Finch. It's the Kodiak that really throws it, and then you say, "Like, well, this is all the fricatives, get away."
Well, you know, this had actually come up on the show previously. Now, Atticus is a bodyguard by trade. Now,
he's a security specialist.
Security specialist. Now, you did
bodyguard so tawdry.
Yeah.
Spoiler. Jesus.
Now, you actually worked in security. What was that? Was that all research for the
people?
He was an assassin.
Yeah,
no, I didn't work in that kind of security.
Okay.
I was lucky enough that nobody ever shot at me.
He worked at two.
No, most of the research I did with for Kodiak, because I've got a guy, his name's Jerry Henley, who did the job. Basically, everything that I use for Kodiak's backstory and his training is Jerry's training. And Jerry's actually, you'll see that he's like listed in almost every book I write, you know, in the acknowledgments, because he is. He's my primary technical guy. He's my go-to guy. So I'll call him up, and I'll say, okay, so I got six people in a room, and I need to blow up three of them, but I need to leave the other three okay.
This
and
is
he'll
what
sigh and say, okay, give me a week. You know, and he'll call me back and say, okay, this is how you do it.
That's a creepy friend you got there.
Yeah, that's scary.
Without any unexplained murders going on.
No, because think about it. If your job is to protect people, then you're kind of obligated to figure out how people are going to try to kill them. So, I mean, if you know, Chris, I don't know, I actually don't know how far you've read, but there's what in the movies is called an action set piece that begins in, like, the second chapter. It's this fairly, I spend a fair amount of time detailing this gunfight,
mm-hmm.
And that gunfight was a gunfight that Jerry and I actually worked out, and we spent about 2 weeks breaking it down and going, okay, you
shooting
know,
at each
you,
other.
How do you survive this? And, you know, what weapons are we using? And what are the parameters of the weapons? And so on.
I thought you were going to say, is a gunfight we were in.
I've gone shooting with Jerry. Every time I go shooting with Jerry, I leave knowing more about how to shoot and knowing all the more that I don't ever want to piss him off.
Nice.
Ever. Well, I will say that one of the things you learn when you start studying security is that really there's no way to keep anybody safe.
Mm-hmm.
And the second you start thinking about it, you can really work yourself into a place where you don't ever want to go outside ever again.
Do you have bottles of pee at your house?
Yes, and my fingernails are very, very long.
That was my next question. Thank you.
Wasn't it, I probably am attributing to the wrong person, but wasn't it Kennedy who said, like, a president, or anyone could kill the president if they're willing to sacrifice their own life to do it?
Yeah, I don't actually know who the quote's attributed to, but it's true. I mean, you know, and there's actually a line later in Patriot Acts where Atticus is discussing with somebody the difference between a killer and an assassin. And the guy he's talking to, and actually the scene is based off of a conversation I had with Garth Ennis at a Wizard World Chicago several years ago, where Garth was talking about, you know, growing up in Ireland and talking about, you know, look, these guys, they want to kill you. They just come at you. You know, they're not going to dick around. To which my response was, well, and by the same token, they don't care if, you know, if anybody knows it was murder. You hire an assassin if you want to make sure that nobody knows it was murder.
I think my girlfriend's an assassin.
That's what these people do. You know, these are the ones who kill, and you just don't know they did it. It looks like he had a heart attack, and it really does look like he had a heart attack, or it really looks like there was an unfortunate fire, or whatever.
Well, now I'm fucking freaked out.
Thanks,
buddy.
This is always the part, because I get this one a lot, too. I get, you don't really believe people like this exist.
Oh.
How would it be like, why not? I mean, the causal logical extension, right? We know for a fact that our government kills people. They use soldiers to do it, right? We call this wars, right? We train people to kill, right? Yes?
Sure.
I'm going to argue that point. So why is it so much further along to then go, okay, well, we're going to train these people to kill really, really well. And then we're going to train them further to make sure they can do it without knowing it. And then at that point, once you've given them all of that knowledge, why is it so hard to believe that at some point they might go, you know what, I got no loyalty to you people.
I'm going to go make a few bucks.
I don't care about this. Why not do it? I can make money doing this.
Mm-hmm. I have to
quit
the show.
Let's face it, you can't really, at that point, put on your resume, you know, professional killer. That's not really going to land you a good job in sales at the BMW dealership. I'm always amazed when I hear people that are like, oh, my God, you know, oh, it was a covert operation. And it's like, of course it was, you idiot. I mean, what do you think? You know, it's like when people act appalled that, you know, intelligence agencies maybe have killed people before. It's like, haven't you been paying attention?
Well, they do.
They're not going to give it up because you asked them to. You know, if our problems with, you know, the radical jihadists could be solved by just having a nice conversation and a cup of tea, we'd have done it already.
That's it. I'm going to the safe room.
You know?
Fuck this.
Take the book with you.
Well, I'm gonna go bottle. I have to go bottle my pee.
I'm never leaving the house.
Let's jump into espionage in the comic realm. And right now you're working on Checkmate, and uh-huh. and that brings up a whole different set of challenges for you to write an espionage book in a world that is populated by superheroes. So
yep.
how do you deal with those issues of you know the political backstabbing and maneuvering in a world that has Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman?
Well, I mean, I try to do it, you know, I suppose the best answer is to say I try to do it the way I try to do everything else, which is as honestly as possible. Which, unfortunately, I guess some people may find very boring at times. But, you know, to make Checkmate work, for my purposes, I had to make the DC Earth make a certain amount of political sense. It had to, in some ways, mirror ours, and then in other ways, you know, obviously couldn't, because the second you have Superman, all bets are off. You know, the hardest part, and I've run into this before, is it's very hard to keep a secret in the DCU. In fact, you know, I would argue it's very hard to do it in any superhero universe. You know, I'm sure that the difficulty is rampant at Marvel as well. Anytime you have a character who can read minds, you're pretty SOL. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, you sit there and you start to go, okay, well, what becomes reasonable? What can you get away with? And then I think the thing that I made things really hard on myself in Checkmate, because I went in and said, okay, some of these people can't have powers. That's a rule. They all have to be perfectly normal. But that's something also that's always fascinated me in writing comics. You know, I always like to juxtapose those people who have these amazing gifts with, you know, those of us who still have to wash the dishes.
Well, the issue that came out this last Wednesday, issue 7?
Security Breach.
17.
Yeah. One of the things I really liked about that issue is, like, it sort of takes on, like, from a storytelling perspective of reading it, it's like a puzzle worked backwards. You know, like, obviously a place like their castle that needs to have security. So what kind of security do you have? You have the type of security that makes sense in, like, a superhero universe.
And you know, it's funny because the guy who I co-wrote the issue with, Eric Troutman, That was his idea. He and I were talking one day, and he looked at me and said, why the hell isn't the castle constantly under attack? And I kind of blinked.
Well, yeah, it always is.
And I said, I don't know. And he said, well, it doesn't make sense. And that sort of led to the idea for the issue, because he was right, you know. And he actually called me on something. I think working with Erica, in particular in 17, has influenced, and you'll see it, you know, the start of 18. But he pointed out something that I hadn't realized was, I think, a flaw in the series, which is, for the first year and a half of the series, I pretty much kept Checkmate self-contained, so that I was working so hard to justify it in the context of the DC universe, I wasn't really letting Checkmate interact with the rest of the DC universe. You know, Shadow Pact once, you know what I mean? And Eric sort of called me on that. He said, no, you need to start drawing the connections. And I think actually that's really helped. You started to see them check out with all the stuff of the Outsiders and the Great Ten, you know, and dealing with the 52 stuff. And it's going to be much more apparent as the series now goes on. I feel the baseline for the book has been established well enough that we can reach out and explore the rest of the DCU, having established Checkmate's place in it.
Do you kind of see Checkmate as DC's version of S.H.I.E.L.D. in kind of, you know, a respect there?
I know nobody's going to believe me when I say this. I've never even thought about it. I know people have drawn that comparison before. And I suppose if one wanted to, one could actually chase it down and come up with a whole bunch of parallels. But I'd never actually thought about it like that. I always thought of it as Queen and Country in the DCU.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I mean, that was always the way I approached it, was I want to do harder espionage. And that, I suppose, you know, if we're going to draw a parallel with S.H.I.E.L.D., S.H.I.E.L.D. has never been about hard espionage.
No.
It has, I think, in recent years become more political. But, you know, it started out as a Bond pastiche. And doing sort of that broad, over-the-top espionage stuff. And frankly, that's not the stuff that interests me. The thing that has always interested me in spy stories is how all these people with incredibly big brains maneuver to these moments of extraordinary violence, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then they go away again. That espionage is this very placid, placid lake, and underneath there are death charges going off all the goddamn time.
Well, the thing with Checkmate and the thing with Queen of Country is that, you know, there's always two conflicts. There's the external and then the internal, and you kind of have that built in with Checkmate with the white and the black, and mm-hmm. That is definitely the undercurrent, are you know, what politics are being played on the Checkmate side that
and
end up coming out.
That's the nod to realism for me, because espionage realistically is not, espionage is always a political tool. It's always a political tool. And you see it in this country. I mean, just, you know, look over the last 2 years at everything that we've heard about what's going on at the CIA and the conflict between the CIA and the DIA at the Pentagon. This is all political stuff, right? If espionage is supposed to be simply about national defense, then it shouldn't matter if you are, quote-unquote, a loyal Bushy or not. Shouldn't matter,
mm-hmm.
right? What should matter is the quality of the intelligence. So we have had people leaving, you know, CIA in particular in droves, because unless the intelligence they present is deemed politically appropriate, it's ignored. That's kind of insane. It's kind of crazy.
Well, it's no longer doing what it's supposed to do. It's no longer...
Well, it certainly doesn't, but I mean, it is kind of like saying, you know, okay, I have a map, I'm going on a trip, I'm trying to get from point A to point B, and I'm talking to you about the route, and you tell me, well, if you go on point B, the bridge is out and you will die. So you need to go on point A, you need to go route A, right, instead of route B. And I look at it and I go, yeah, but you know what? I really want to see what's along route B, so I'm just going to ignore that piece of information. Okay, but that was kind of crucial.
Pay attention to your instructions.
What are the
MapQuest sucks. Bad MapQuest.
One of the things I sort of pick up from a lot of your work is dealing with secrets, whether it's political secrets or personal secrets or the secrets people use to you know affect other people. I mean, is that something you sort of go into a little bit working on a story, is like how to use that in some way, or is it just something that interests you, like, you know, how people spend so much time either using other people's secrets or protecting their own secrets for their own benefit?
Yeah, I think absolutely. But I think I do it now almost subconsciously. One of the first things when I was starting to really learn how to write, I would I'd write up bios for my characters, and in each bio I would say what's their secret, and the secret may, you know, in many cases never ever comes out. You know, like the secret for, you know, Atticus's secret has never been, it's never come up.
Mm-hmm.
But by the same token, if you know the Kodiak series, Bridget's secret was a whole novel. You know, she says, hey, used to be a junkie. We all have stuff that we don't want other people to know. And, you know, sometimes it's stupid shit and sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's serious. And sometimes it's something worth killing for and sometimes it's not. But you get great drama simply by having those present. You know what I mean?
Do you do that with characters that maybe aren't your creation? Do you do that with Diana or Batman or Superman? Do you go through that same process with them?
Not with them, because those are characters that have been exceptionally well drawn by people, you know, long before I ever came on the scene. So trying to sit there and go, well, what's the new secret? Is not really the necessary.
Yeah. One time Batman strangled a child.
No.
Yeah, no. Unnecessary. You know, also fundamentally changes the character, right. So probably not such a good secret. And actually the Batman secret is a well known secret. It's part of the character. Yeah. The secret is, you know, especially he feels guilty.
Well, yeah.
His parents are dead.
They all have secrets. I mean, that's why they've lasted so long, because they all have that built into them. You know, Superman's Clark Kent. That's his, you know, secret.
Sure. Well, but there's also an emotional secret, which is Superman wants to be human. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And those are the things that kind of make the engine run for me.
Well, I like the idea that, you know, like you said with Atticus, you have a character whose secret you probably never plan on telling, but it can help you so much in him dealing with the world and the characters around him and everyone
right
else
now.
Because
what is his secret?
It just adds.
No.
but I love the idea of that. You know, you have that built into the character to help affect, you know, what he does and everything in the world. But it may never come out.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the secret to me is that for writing a good character, at least trying to write a character honestly, is to, you know, that's the word, is to approach those things with honesty and be like, well, what are people really like? And if you do that well, you know, if you honor those emotional truths, then you can write about just about anything or anyone. If you remember that, hey, you know, we all know what it's like to be lonely, then that's an emotional touchstone we can all share.
Right.
And you may be able to leap tall buildings in a single bound, but you still know what it's like to be lonely. And while we can't leap tall buildings, we can empathize with Clark Kent's loneliness. Or, you know, his rejection. Or any of those things.
Well, I think for some reason of late, there's been a lot of television that I've been watching that has been dealing sort of with people's secrets. There's just been shows that I've been attracted to of late.
And
what's
of
in
that.
This box?
Well, just amazing. Yeah, what's in this box?
What's in the box? What's in the box?
Yeah, that and Big Brother. You know, yeah,
secret.
Those. No.
There you go.
But I think what amazes me so much about it is a lot of times what people will go through trying to keep a secret and then eventually, because a lot, you know, eventually, you know, sooner or later that secret's going to come out. Everyone,
yeah,
you know, has secrets that come out sooner or later. And a lot of times you sort of build the stuff up in your head that it's going to be so much worse. And that's what sort of creates your ability to do horrible things to protect them.
This is a very dark night.
Sorry.
Very sunny.
Yeah, so it's very...
Secrets and depression and stuff.
Well, talking about secrets, anyway, we can move on. But
that's good, actually.
The other book that you're going to be working on here pretty soon is...
Speaking of secrets...
The question.
You got to ask questions, right?
And
you like that segue?
Oh, man.
Yeah, very, very, very deft. Yeah.
Chris's secret is that he can't do segues.
Mine is I'm a tranny.
Yeah, so what is the story with the crime Bible?
That's the question, isn't it?
You're as bad with segues as I am.
And the interview ended abruptly there. Five-issue mini, it's called The Five Books of Blood. It deals specifically, the way it's built is that each issue is about a specific passage in the crime Bible, in the Black Book. And, you know, in the same way that the Bible is all, you know, the five books of Moses and everything else, right? The crime Bible is all of these amalgamated things, some of which we've heard of, right? We know that there's something called the Book of Curtin. We know there's something called the Book of Moriarty. Things like that. So there are four lessons and then there is a parable. There's a tale. And the four lessons sort of form the tenets of the faith. And the lessons are, in order of publication, deceit, lust, greed, and murder. So issue one is the lesson of deceit, issue two is the lesson of lust, issue three is the lesson of greed, issue four is the lesson of murder, and issue five is called the parable of the faceless, which if you know, mm-hmm. say it like you're running it together, it sounds like faithless. And throughout the series you have basically what Renee has been doing for the last, since 52 ended, is she put in about a year in Nanda Parbat with Richard and Todd, and then decided that somebody had to attack this thing, and so she has been trying to unravel the various layers. So in each issue, there is the question encountering one aspect of the religion, and one of the other purposes of the miniseries is to explain, because we didn't really explain it in 52, what the organization is, what it believes, who actually would join it, why they would join, what they get out of it, and how pervasive it is throughout the DCU, because if it's only eight guys chanting in a basement, they're not really a threat to anybody.
Yeah.
But if it's actually, you know, something that's global and spans every level of society and includes, you know, an analyst at the NSA and a crime boss in, you know, South London and, you know, a priest in Rome, that now we're in business. So that's kind of what's going on in it. It's hard for me to give a synopsis about the series because it almost reads like five short stories that are linked. Each issue pretty much stands alone, but each issue also continues the previous issue's overall narrative, and then it all culminates in the fifth issue. Sort of you realize in the fifth issue what actually has been going on the whole time.
I feel like I'm about to ask like a Larry King style question. Like, do you like writing villains?
Do you like writing villains, Greg?
Do you enjoy writing villains more?
I like writing villains that I get, if that makes sense. My biggest problem with most villains is I look at them and I'm like, that's just stupid behavior. I mean, nobody would do that, you know? It's one of the reasons why I can look at somebody like Two-Face and be like, I get Two-Face. I get the malfunction there. I understand it. Right? I can understand this guy who's just absolutely so incapable of believing in the system or believing in right or wrong or making the determinations himself, he's got to flip a damn coin. Yeah. He flips the coin to go, do I stab you or let you live? You know? Do I do the evil thing or the good thing? It's a moral barometer. But, you know, villains are just like, I woke up today and I was pissed off, so I'm going to take over the world. It's like, you know what? I just can't get behind that.
Who's someone you don't get? Like, just as, like, a flip side to saying you get Two-Face.
Here's a good one that I don't get. I don't get Clayface right now. Yeah, there's a good example in the DC. I just don't get Clayface.
He just kind of shows up.
You know, yeah, well, and it's like, okay, he's just a force of nature. It's like, back off.
He used to be really fucked up.
I get Deadshot, you know? Ostrander did amazing work with that character.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you can understand the motivations there. You can figure out what's making him tick.
Clayface just kind of, like, shows up. And then gets beat.
And looks kick-ass.
Yeah, and looks cool, but just kind of shows up, and it's like... Yeah, and there's, like, 8 Clayfaces, so you never remember which one it is. If it's, like, the cool Alan Moore one who, like, hid in the mall, you know, and was all... You imagined he was in love with a mannequin. That's the best one. That was the best Clayface. And then all the ones after that are all sort of like, I'm made out of clay. And obviously bitter, for good reason, because
well,
you're
made out of clay. That's the only motivation. But sooner or later, that motivation kind of runs dry. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, what do you, you know.
Still man on the clay.
Either do something. Well, going back to the question, ever since Renee Montoya became the question, there's been some grumbling throughout fandom about that decision. Uh-huh. to kill off Vic and uh-huh. and turn Renee into the question. What are your feelings on it, just to sort of get it out there?
My feelings on it are that it was, I think, a good story. Mm-hmm. And that's why it was told. You know, that we had never seen death like that in the DCU. In fact, we don't really ever see death like that in comics. Normally we see a last-minute reprieve. One of the things we wanted in 52, and it shows up, is, you know, how come some people live, some people get to come back from the dead, some people survive ridiculous things, and some people die of really mundane, horrible, they just die mundane, horrible deaths.
I have to say, you fucking tortured us with the question, because, like, every week when we thought he would die... Oh, he's still around for like
he's
another
gonna
week.
Through.
He's gonna pull
he's
through.
He's gonna pull through somehow.
Yeah, wait.
Yeah, that's called cancer.
true enough. True.
It's funny that you'll see. I don't know if anybody's been picking up the 52 trades, but you know we've been doing comments in them, commentaries about after certain issues, each of us gets asked to write something, and the Volume 3 trade has the issue where Charlie dies. And, you know, I was asked to write up some notes on it. And in it, I talked about for the first time the fact that everybody, you know, everybody points a finger at me and says, you did this. And it was actually both Keith and I. And Keith lost both his father and his father-in-law to lung cancer. And a lot of what we ended up doing with Charlie came out of his experience. And a lot of that was really governed by Keith sort of whispering in my ear, saying, you know, and talking just about his experiences and about how brutal it was and then how sort of sublimely beautiful it was, at least in one instance. And it was really important, I think, to us to especially, you know, juxtapose with the other narratives that were going through 52 to show this as a very human death, because for all of, you know, for all the wonder that is the question, one of the things that's happened to him that happened sort of in the evolution of the character and that Denny did when Denny, you know, pretty much recreated him, was he humanized him beautifully. He made him the most human guy wearing a mask in the DCU. What's his power? His power is he won't quit until he gets an answer. I mean, really, because there's no other superpower, you know? And frankly, you don't have to put on a mask really to ask the questions he's asking. Those stories were very human stories, and consequently, you know, one of the things we'd always tried to do with Renee and Gotham Central, you know, Ed and I had worked very hard at doing, was keeping all the characters in Gotham Central very human, and keeping their problems human problems. You know, Renee fit very naturally with Charlie. And, you know, I understand, and I've said, you know, I understand people not liking it. I understand that for a lot of folks it's an uphill battle. I also understand there are a lot of people who only know the Question from the animated series, and that ain't the same guy. So, you know, and then, you know, she appeared in Countdown a certain way, and that appearance in Countdown actually is nothing like she looks like in Crime Bible. So that's further muddying the waters. I think that people who, you know, saw Renee at her lowest point, which was pretty much the start of 52, you know, they haven't seen her since then. And a lot has happened. It's hard to spend a year, you know, in the presence of Richard Dragon. And for those of you who know your Question lore, that's the exact same thing Charlie did. And not be changed and not see the world a different way. And when she shows up, you know, in the first issue of Crime Bible, she's a different cat. There's a lot that's the same, but for the first time, she's also somebody who's not so angry all the time, is not tearing at the world and tearing at herself. There's a peace about her, and that, you know, her satisfaction with herself, she interacts with the world in a very different way. Different characters, just to say characters grow, and it's very rare in mainstream comics to be able to take a character of one of the big companies and actually watch them evolve. Because they can't, for the most part. They're not allowed to. You know what I mean? We fake it. We go, oh, well, you know, oh, he's getting married. That's actually not evolution. That's just a change in the status quo. But we haven't actually seen how that changes the character, you know what I mean? When Renee is a character that, for whatever reason, she can grow.
For me personally, with the Question, and I hadn't really read much of the Question. It was a character that I hadn't really ever thought that I got, or it just never really struck me until I read, you know, the story with him and Renee in 52, and then I felt like I really finally understood that character. And so that was like the hardest part of seeing him, you know, die, was that I finally felt a connection to that character. But I mean, it's not like I had, you know, I personally, I am interested to see where.
No, I understand exactly what you're saying, and then the counter to that is this: you know what? You get no dramatic capital at all if I kill somebody you don't give a rat's ass about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think
ISIS dying in 52 only works because you love her.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to see her go. And you know, ISIS was marked for death the second she walked on the stage. You know? She came in with a target right between her eyes.
And it still hurt when she died, even though anyone who reads comics kind of had to know, like,
it was coming. Yeah.
I mean, you had to know it was coming. But again, you know, it was something actually Denny taught me. You know, when I first was working on Tech, and he said, you don't kill the characters you hate. You kill the characters you love. Because those are the ones that matter. Those are that's when deaths matter. And, you know, right now, Jesus Christ, right now we're in this era of comics where every week somebody's dying.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, but so, you kill half of them.
I cannot.
Between you and Brubaker,
you're not.
Murderer's Row, I don't know.
That was a CSI thing.
Wait,
that's totally different.
Speaking of 52 and all that, and I know that was a huge pressure and stress on all of you guys, but is there part of you that misses it now that you're not doing
no.
it?
No.
Hell no.
No. And I say that, but then I also say this. You know, I look back in 52, and I'm incredibly proud of the work we did. I think, especially when it's all traded and people are able to sit down and read the whole thing and read it together, I think we did something remarkable there. I think it's a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end. And a lot of stories don't have that these days in comics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it works. And I think we had some really, really beautiful moments of writing. All of us, I think, really hit some great stuff. That said, you know, Jeff and Mark and Grant are like my dearest friends, in the same way that if we'd all been in Dog Sector, you know, on Omaha Beach and lived, we'd all be like, hey, you remember Normandy? Fuck yeah.
It's just like how I talk
back?
To
hell no.
It's like how I talk to Chris every day.
don't. Not really.
Not really. No. See him on Fridays,
I mean,
and that's enough.
That's the thing is, it's not like, you know, I'm looking for the opportunity to go back under fire again.
No.
You know, but I certainly acknowledge with pride what it is we accomplished.
You survived. You did it. You guys pulled it off.
I have to say, there's part of me, though, that really misses 52.
Yeah.
I mean, I got in such a groove with that book of reading it every week, and there's part of me that just, I could use some more. But
you know, and thus you shall find something, I am sure, my son.
Oh, there's plenty out
Booster
there.
Gold.
But I ain't writing it.
Booster Gold, good sequel.
Booster Gold is good. we got to move on to my favorite series, and I didn't save it for last this time. But Queen and Country God. Update. We just finished up the
clear out of the way, everyone.
We need some alone time.
Fucking man love stuff is crossing a line.
We just finished up the Red Panda arc, which will lead into the Private Wars novel, and you wrote a pretty heartfelt letter in the back of the last issue, kind of apologizing to a lot of Queen and Country fans, and it's one that I think a lot of Queen and Country fans. We're not looking for an apology. We love it when the book comes out and understand that, you know, what it may be, you know, something that you love to write. We know it doesn't, you know, necessarily pay the bills.
I'm grateful. I really am. I'm amazingly and always will be grateful to Q&T fans for their incredible patience. It doesn't change the fact that I acted like an asshole. There is an obligation when you're putting out a series to hit your schedule. And if not hit your schedule, at least come close to it. And I was blowing deadlines by years. And that, you know, just on my own sense of professionalism, is appalled by that. You know, and the reasons that the schedule got screwed up, the reasons that I fell behind as I did, they're all very good reasons. There are lots of very good reasons. Then change the fact should never have happened. And when you have fans who are following a book, and in particular following a book from a small publisher in black and white that not a lot of people are reading, those actually aren't fans you should in any way, shape, or form take for granted. And more than anything else, that's the purpose of the apology, is that I really didn't want any Q&T fans to feel taken for granted.
And I don't think that the majority of Q&C fans either, because I think that most of them understand what is going on there. But you know, with the timeline, and we've talked about this before, is that it does kind of create a little bit of a rat's nest of, you know, how do you keep things current and keep with a timeline?
Yeah, I mean, my goal is sometime in 2009 to start Q&C Volume 2. Mm-hmm. And Q&C Volume 2 will be a couple years down the line. Chase will have become D-Ops. It'll be her first, probably within her first 90 days of becoming D-Ops. Crocker will most likely have finally made it to Deputy Chief. There will be at least one of the minders that's been established. Either Chris or Nikki will still be in the section.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be a new Minder 3 who, unfortunately, is a woman. And unfortunately, is a woman because Chase is cruel to her. Because as far as Tara is concerned, I went there first. You have to be better than me. You have to do everything I did, and I had to do everything they did, except I had to do it backwards in high heels.
And so are you.
You better learn how to fly, bitch.
Nice.
You know?
So I knew that there would be at least one new Minder introduced. So that's interesting that you're going to go that route. And I'm sure that she is going to put her through hell. Is the series going to? I mean, you've never put a date to it of, you know, this is this year. But are you going to try and keep things as current in the political landscape as you can?
Well, I mean, you know, yes, but without putting dates to it. In the mm-hmm. same way that, you know, if you pick up Operation Crystal Ball, it very clearly starts around 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, you're watching reactions to 9/11 at the start of that issue. You know, does that mean it's 6 years later when we're in Iraq? Have you had a rotunda? And the answer is yes, but no.
Sure.
Because, yes, clearly we're in Iraq, and clearly we're in Iraq as a result of, of a coalition invasion. But by the same token, Chase isn't 6 years older, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So politically, the book, and this is the problem, politically the book has to stay somewhat contemporary. But the characters have to remain at the same time somewhat timeless. And you can only do that for so long before I felt I could only do that for so long before I ran out of rope. So,
well, sure, and now you've introduced a character in Tamsin that, you know, that she's going to be very, very easy to chart how old she is, because you're
exactly
doing
it. And that's the other thing, is that Tamsin is a prop right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all Tamsin can be is a prop. And I'd much prefer Tamsin to be a character, which means she's got to be at least 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
Right? She's got to be old enough that she can actually walk and talk and have opinions. I'd love to do it. I've got an idea. You know, one of the stories I want to do is a story with Tamsin and Rachel Beck, right, Tara's friend.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, as far as Rachel's concerned, Tamsin's the greatest accessory ever. You know? And those are, like I said, these are all ideas that we're going to have to wait. So what was the quickest way to grow them up? Oh, let's stop for a while, restart in a bit, and say time's passed.
That's great. And the relaunch for Volume 2, once again, it's 2009 you're looking at, hopefully?
I'm shooting for 2009.
Yeah. All right. Pull out
I want to get Stumptown up and running first.
Which is exactly where I was going to go next. Stumptown, the new series from Oni, going once again to a female lead, and but you're street level, and it's a PI, which is I know from all the Rockford Files and Simon and Simon that you talk about that that's a love of yours.
Oh yeah, that's actually the first love.
But so. Simon and Simon, really? I mean, seriously?
Look, I'm not saying it was good. I'm saying that, all right? You know, I watch, it's funny, my wife got me for my birthday the first season of Simon and Simon on DVD, and I got the first season of Rockford on DVD, and you watch the first episode of Rockford Files, and the first 5 minutes of that episode, there's no dialogue, you're just watching Jim tailing a guy, and you're interested, and you're engaged, and it's smart, and the first episode of Simon and Simon, they're on a stakeout in the back of a truck, and somebody's delivering hot food, and it's all about, ha, 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 we're in a truck. And, you know, the qualitative difference is enormous.
Sure.
But, you know, I was 8.
Now, P.I., set in Portland, so, you know, right in your backyard. When is Stumptown going to be hitting comic shops?
Well, it depends on who you talk to.
Okay.
If you talk to Oni, they're like, oh, it'll probably be, you know, third quarter next year. If you talk to Matthew Southworth and me, we want it to be out by San Diego next year.
Okay.
But one of the things we're going to try on that is a different publishing schedule as well. And we're going to try to do 4-on, 4-off, 4-on, so that you get each case is 4 issues. You get Stumptown 1, 2, 3, 4, and then there's 4 months, nothing, and then 5, 6, 7, 8, and so on, so that each arc is going to be completed before it's solicited.
Nice.
So, you see, we dodged the Queen and Country problem this way.
I don't know what the premise of Stumptown is going to be, whether it's a straight PI book or not, but...
It's a reaction to this spate of obsessive-compulsive, I-can-see-dead-people detectives. I just want a detective who, you know, detects.
Mm-hmm.
I just want a PI who goes out there and is willing to take a punch for a client and who is willing to look at, you know, a corrupt district attorney and say, bite me. You know, and I come from the Chandler school, for lack of a better phrase. You know, the bylaw is the detective in these stories must be the best man in his world and a good enough man for any world. And that's the rule. That's what we're after. So, you know, the detective in Stumptown, she's smart, like her predecessors. She has a bad habit of not knowing when to shut up. She barely breaks even, but she, you know, she has her own code, and she has her own sense of honor, and like the PIs that have come before her, they're kind of knight errants in the modern world, you know. We take on lost causes.
You know, we didn't talk about your new video game.
No, we didn't talk about Logan's Shadow.
What?
Life and Filter Logan's Shadow, which I helped on the story with a fellow named John Garvin, who is basically the creator of all things Siphon Filter.
Okay.
And it's fun. I mean, it's a fun game. You know, they called me pretty much out of the blue. The people involved knew the novels, and they said, this is what we're doing, this is the game, this is what we have designed, and we just were really looking at the story. Do you know the material? And I said, I don't know the material at all. It's fun. It's really cool. And, you know, we tried to add some of those elements of espionage that we were talking about before, because in theory, it's an espionage game. And one of the things I noted was, nowhere in there is there any political anything. You know, you see, it's a game that is always about, you know, doing the operation. And the game still is, you know, Logan's Shadow is about performing the operation level to level. But now there's a backdrop to it, and I'm very pleased with the story, John, and I came up with. I think people are going to dig it.
Outstanding. Well, I tell you, we'll wrap up here in a second, but I just want to let you know I'm halfway through season 2 of Sandbaggers, so it is giving me my Q&C fix until I'm taking it very slow, just watching an episode a month or so. But hopefully that'll
it's
see
all the
me
the awesomeness he can take.
But
so you need to pace that out, and then when you go through all of those, I'd recommend switching to The Prisoner if you need to pace yourself out.
Okay, that's I will do that. I will do that. Well, Greg,
go inside, Chris.
All right. Well, Greg, it is always a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much, and. You know, come out to Chicago next year.
I will.
All right.
I'll make a point of it. It was great talking to you guys. Thank you, all of you, for your time and entertainment value.
You're the best, man. You have a great night.
All right, you guys too. Take care.
All right.
Bye, Greg.
Bye.
And we'd like to thank Greg, as always, for joining us. Very entertaining guest.
He's so charming.
That was just awesome.
We should probably move on to some listener email. We got some really good ones. We had, 2 weeks off.
Because thanks again to Greg. Chicago.
Yes, he's awesome. First listener email is from G.P. Watson. It says, guys,
yes.
Thanks in no small part to the AC podcast. This recent comic fan attended his first con, Wizard World Chicago.
Oh.
I have to say that in addition to meeting Steven Silver, Jim Mahfood, J. Scott Campbell, and Cody Chamberlain of Punks the Comic, meeting the crew of Around Comics was definitely a highlight. When I good-naturedly busted Chris for the fact that neither of the emails I'd sent him have made it under the air, he seemed genuinely concerned and told me to mail again.
Because we don't want to miss any of our 10 listeners to quit.
Yes.
Emails. Yeah.
No, don't leave us. If this one doesn't make it on, I'll know it was personal, and I'll dispatch my ninjas immediately.
Let me stop recording right now. I'm just kidding.
Oh, what? Keep going.
I was kidding.
Oh. Anyway, I've got a question I'm generally curious about. I want
genuinely.
You know, genuinely.
Not generally.
Generally?
God, Jesus.
Congenially? I want to know why, even though I've listened to pretty much every episode of Around Comics as well as a number of other podcasts about comics, I've never heard anyone mention Tank Girl or the work of Jamie Hewlett. As someone who is primarily interested in comics for the artwork, I find myself regularly referring to my Tank Girl trade for inspiration. No one seems to mention the new Ashley Wood version either, and it too is loaded with explosive pen work.
I thought that I have mentioned that one. Because I've actually emailed Ashley, which I've never met.
I think
it was a fan email from me. Yeah, maybe to you guys, but on the show. But I love Tank Girl. Casey is Tank Girl every year for Halloween.
Gorilla.
My girlfriend. I made her. Gorillas are awesome.
Yeah, I love gorillas.
But I actually emailed Ashley Wood as just a fan email and saying, I love Tank Girl, and while yours is very different than Jamie, it's really cool anyway. You know, just a new take on it.
Did you pick up the Metal Gear Solid?
Yeah.
Well, that was...
Yeah, really cool. So I don't read it, but
it's pretty. Absolutely.
Just stare at it in bed.
Stare at it.
No, we're fans. I like Tank Girl. And speaking of art, have you mentioned the great new collection of the art of Fletcher Hanks, I Shall Destroy All Civilized Planets, The Fantastic Comics of Fletcher Hanks?
No.
No?
I never mentioned it. Never even heard of it.
It's some truly insane stuff that deserves a mention and a look if you haven't seen the stuff. Scotty, if you ever want to come up to one of our monthly Dr. Sketchies events in Madison and school all us wannabes on how poorly we draw our models, I'll make sure to put your name on the VIP list.
Ooh, they got a list.
How like to properly draw our models.
Properly.
Boy, I butchered that.
That's a Freudian slip.
Chris,
there.
You're not reading the next one.
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
I'm off.
You're from Madison. You lived in Madison, right? Maybe I'll get Tom to take me to Madison.
Oh, Madison's awesome.
I'll teach you guys some.
Yeah.
Teach Madison's you guys mad skills. Yeah. I'll Madison's lay the fun. Smack down, as they say.
As the kids say.
As those young whippersnappers say.
Hank, you say that, right? Hank says that all the time.
What do kids say?
All right, the next email is from Felt Martin. He said, "Hi guys, it's Felt Martin here from the forum. Haven't posted much, but have been listening carefully. The show is great, but I can't hold my tongue any longer after two outrageous attacks on my countrymen in consecutive weeks. First, Sal has to go at our former world champion and motor racing legend Jackie Stewart, calling him a short jockey. As if that wasn't enough, the next week Scotty pretends to praise Mark Miller, while the time making sure everyone knows he is a short arse too. Me and my fellow Scots are furious. I'm coming to Chicago with Sean Connery, Dario Franchitti, and Lulu, and we're going to kick your fucking arses. Cheers, guys. Keep up the good work, Martin."
Well, Scottish when did people are short.
Well, first of all, everybody's shorter than me.
Yeah, Scotty's giant. Scotty's a giant.
Yeah. I don't ever remember in my life.
There are a lot of fairly big Scotsmen.
What have I read? When did I praise Mark Miller?
You were talking about him. I don't. I think you just said we. At the end of it, we said something. He's just kidding around. And well, Jackie Stewart,
guy's honestly, getting really
this
upset.
This is fucking slander.
We don't oh no, I'm not even gonna go there. I'm not
fucking.
Sean Connery's like 5'7".
No, but, God, well, Jackie right. Stewart, I completely massacred that whole thing.
So this one is from fucking Felt Martin. No, I'm just kidding. This one's from Lynn. Just downloaded episodes 125 A and B. I wanted to wish you guys, Tom, Scotty, John, Norton, Crank, Dark Tower, and everyone else who's been a part of AC, a happy 125th episode. Hope you guys had a blast at the con. Again, congrats. Type at you later, Lynn.
Nice.
Cool. Thanks.
Thank you.
Lynn of Bushy Tails.
It was kind of
I
lucky
didn't
our 125th.
Kind of
at the show.
At
the
yeah,
con?
That was our con. I wasn't planning that way.
It was extra
do you look at me different now?
After from the con?
After going walking the floor.
Oh, yeah, that was an interesting experience, was it walking the floor, being around you at the con, because, I kept being surprised that people wanted to come up and meet you, because, what? It's just
taken.
Scotty. Why do they want his picture autograph, and then I would remember, that's right, he draws, too.
I've never seen an artist slap so many fans
as me
in one show, just one after another.
No, honestly, Scotty,
and you're like, why are you bringing the sketchbook with all this other garbage inside of it? I want a fresh new one. With that one, that's all I want. That's all I want to do.
I was actually not surprised, but happy to see how nice you are to all your fans, and even people that maybe aren't even your fans, just like. You know, anyone that
I'm
you,
a nice,
are, you
a,
are nice, yeah.
Right. Everybody, people, I joke and haha, and that's sometimes I.
You come
I,
off.
I think
as,
people that just hear me and don't see the giant cheese on my face when I say that you're a fucking idiot type stuff. You know, but
they take it a little personal.
Yeah, no, I mean, God, these people are the reason that I get to do what I do, right? So,
but it was an interesting experience.
Important to remember. There aren't any non-fans of Scotty Young.
No.
Just that, people he hasn't met yet.
That's right.
That just haven't seen his work.
Just haven't seen his work.
I did have fun, like, you making faces at me while you were on the X-Men panel. I thought that was
a
highlight
that
for
Scott
me.
That was Scott Collins.
Shit.
Okay, this is another Scott. This is Scott from Wyoming, Michigan. When is the Long Box of Love coming back? We don't know. He disappeared.
Yeah. That's Brian Balls.
Haven't heard from him.
And I like Scotty. He's really funny and has a lot to add, and he has upped the quality level of the show. But sometimes he drowns out Tom's comic genius.
Damn.
Wow.
I'm sorry, Tom.
Oh,
sorry,
man. Care. We might have
Tom,
to...
Tom, you are the freaking
make
man.
Make a limit
Did
on...
Did my mom send this?
You are the freaking man. It has to be your mom.
It has to be my mom. I also want to bet with my wife that she had to read the first trade of Walking Dead. Needless to say, 1 week later, she is all caught up with the issues and loves it. I think I will try Y next with her.
She will like. She will like why. Yeah, yeah. Casey is in love with the why because she liked the walking aspect.
Yeah, she does enjoy.
They go places.
Traveling.
That's yeah, like traveling.
What do you like about it, honey? They that they walk.
They walk.
Mysticism.
And he's the last man.
I want to know why.
The monk.
The last man.
P.S. Scotty, I catch myself saying I'm bossy from time to time.
I'll pass Khalees.
Yeah, I think that's
I'll
more Khalees.
I'll tell Khalees about it.
As we hang out with her after the show.
And she's all like, I hate you so much right now.
All right, who wants to I'll take go, on the next tome just,
yeah,
email?
Chris doesn't get to read it.
Yeah, sorry, Lord, guys. I'm a little rusty.
Dear Around Comics fellows, imagine, if you will, that a large snow falls quickly on Chicago one cold, cold Friday evening in the December months to come. You are all left alone recording the podcast as each patron, and what not coincidentally, left the shop for a few moments just as a monstrous snowdrift piled high against the store, making escape impossible. Now fast forward to a few weeks later. The snowdrift is present, still present, and there is no sign of escape. You're already finishing eating all of the comics in the store, and there are long boxes now gently referred to as shit buckets sitting foully in the corner when Tom looks up, all bright-eyed, at the rest of you. You all lean in real close enough to smell the real rancid rank of Scotty's breath. There were mints found in the back three days earlier, but Scotty refused, and Tom tells you his plan, that you must resort to cannibalism. So my question here is, given the opportunity and need, which member of the podcast would be first to feed his friends in a primeval battle for survival? Keep in mind that you don't want to frivolously kill off members after member of your show, so picking the man to die is a tough decision. You will need to weigh the attributes of each of your friends carefully, namely how much energy and nutritional sustenance you believe could be gained from this person, how easily they will be to kill. They will undoubtedly resist death, undoubtedly. And finally, how tasty you'd think they'd be. Dearly and lovely... Niles.
Wow. Sal would kill Chris 1/2 hour into
it. I wouldn't survive the night. I wouldn't survive the first night.
Sal would strangle him and then look up at us and go, we had to do it. And we have like half a pizza still left.
I've been told that I taste like chocolate.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah. Niels, he doesn't realize...
I don't know who told you that. Yeah.
He doesn't realize how close I am to losing my life every Friday night.
Yeah, it's a very fine line.
It's like, well, we just talked about it a little bit outside, that fighting and... And I stated
you're a dirty
that, well,
fighter.
I'll fucking shoot you, right?
You if you have a gun.
Well, I thought about this.
Find a hiding place.
Well, I know this motherfucker has a gun in the store.
Yeah. I was just thinking, what me and Scotty are going to do when you fuckers are dead?
Yeah. Well, you know, Sal and I talked about this.
We talked about this.
We'd have to take Beatty down
guys
first.
Some dark motherfuckers.
No, Mark, what'll happen is...
Mark's got the most meat on him, so I think he would actually have to be the first to go.
It'll get cold.
He would last the long.
Slice Mark open and
stay warm.
Like a tauntaun. I thought he smelled bad.
On the outside.
I'd keep Hank around for like, you know, like sometimes when you want a snack, like grapes or something. That'd be Hank. He's like a grape, right? Just like, oh, I don't want a full meal, but just a snack.
No.
Hank would be like rum cake. You eat too much, you get drunk.
I'd probably lose it and get paranoid after a while. And
yeah,
kill everyone.
Why don't you like me?
Kill everyone.
What's
in their
happening?
Sleep.
No, what would happen is he would be paranoid during all day, like Survivor style, right? You watch Survivor, and there's always one guy that starts really flipping the fuck out. Why have they vote his ass off? You'd be all in the corner like, why don't they like me? Well, as soon as you fall asleep, we eat you.
What's that supposed to mean?
What a dark fucking email you are, GP Watson.
All right, yeah. Scott, you want to take this last one?
All I know is I'm living.
All right, this one is from Eric. Hey, guys, this is Eric from Philly, a longtime listener who hasn't done anything on your forums, though I love checking in on occasions now and again. I was writing because my friend Nick and I just recently started a comic book podcast of our own, entitled Irresponsibly Powerless. Little competition there.
Triple A.
Oh, no, stay with that name.
We just got our third episode done and are right now posting it online. I'd love for you guys to have a listen if you get a chance and give us some feedback. I love how you guys provide a casual comic book discussion atmosphere while still adding really intelligent insights into art and the industry. I'm hoping to eventually work up to providing two short shows a week on the comics of the week and an addition discussion on random topics relevant to comics today. It's a pretty new thing. But that's but that's still in the making. The first two shows were more trials in the whole podcast process. So I can attest to the quality, but I'm getting prouder. I can't attest to the quality, but I'm getting prouder with the latest one. Thanks again, and keep Tom nice and crunk.
Crunk. Yeah, I just watched a crunk documentary.
About crunk.
About crunking. I don't know.
Maybe crazy clown dancing?
Yeah.
Isn't that crumping?
Oh, yeah, you're right. It is crumping.
Yeah, it's like a mixture of...
It was insane.
Get
it, was
it
cool.
straight burrito.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, there goes my street cred.
Fucking nacho.
Same advice we always give. Have fun and make it a show that you want to listen to.
Don't even fucking think about competing with us. No, just enjoy yourself.
All right. Well,
but we will fucking eat you.
Yeah. Come get snowed in.
Yeah, don't get snowed in. All right. All right. Take care of our listener email, but you can become a friend of the program.
You can become a friend of the program. Go to aroundcomics.com where you can download our LCS flyer. Ask your comic shop manager or owner if they'll display it in the store. If they do, send us an email. We'll mention you and the store on the show as well as post it on our site. Become a friend of the program today.
If you would like to virtually touch Chris's taint.
Tickle his taint.
You can leave an iTunes review.
Nothing gets him...
Thanks
more
to
excited.
Ken from Indy and Jeremy Burks.
We hung out with Ken.
We did.
Ken and Justin.
I don't remember names.
Faces.
Yeah, what do they look like? Was that the heavy guy with balding dude glasses and the skinny friend?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Those guys were cool. I don't remember the names, but
no, they were very cool. We had a great time with them.
Yeah. I'm gonna come up with so many sexual
innuendos.
Ways that the iTunes reviews pleasure me.
That was a good one.
Speaking of sex, check out all the great things that Around Comics has to offer. We post the next week's topic on Tuesdays at our forum at www.aroundcomics.com. Remember, you can also visit us at www.comicspace.com and www.myspace.com.
Both / Around Comics.
I think I'm going to build a site, www.aroundcomics.
We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network. Find more great podcasts at www.comicspodcast.com.
And thank you to InStock Trades for sponsoring this episode. Waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All at great discounted prices. Remember that all orders over $50 ship for free. So whether you're buying an absolute edition or catching up on showcases and essentials. InStockTrades.com is your new best friend.
And we are proud to help support the Hero Initiative. Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators.
Essential.
Creators who need emergency medical aid.
Essential.
Financial support for essentials of life. And an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give back something to the people who give us so much enjoyment. For more information, visit... HeroInitiative.org or call 310-909-7809. Period.
Did any of you guys happen to catch in the last Blade issue? The last
Gene
two
Colan
pages,
did the
Gene
last
Colan.
Two pages.
I thought that was pretty cool, considering he
Gene still got it.
He helped create that character.
Yeah,
so.
I thought that was sweet. Awesome. And they were rocking at the Hero booth in Chicago. Paul Jenkins played pool pretty much all weekend long.
I kicked his ass.
Fucking sharked everybody.
He did.
He's fucking nasty. He's playing blindfolded and shit.
He whipped
and lost by like a ball.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Well, he played Quesada blindfolded. Right?
Yeah. And he had somebody else aim.
He whipped Miller. He played behind his back the entire time. I think Paul lost 4 matches the entire weekend.
And that was only to get more people to, like...
Yeah, because people were like,
I'm not going to play him. And then he'd lose one to get... And then people would be like, oh, because he's a fucking hot. He's Fast Eddie, right?
He's a shark.
Color of money, man.
And what's sad is that I hear that he's a better golfer than he is a pool player.
He's good at everything, man. Yeah. He can play guitar.
I saw him perform surgery.
He can drink like a fish.
Oh, God. On the pool table.
He gives a hell of a hand job.
All right, well, I'd like to thank... I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. Sal, Scotty, Tom, and of course, Mr. Greg Rucka.
Or, as I like to call you all, dinner.
Everyone,
if you want beef dinner, bring the Rucka.
Have a fantastic rest of your week and weekend. We'll be back again on Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime,
Come
on.
In between time.
Thank you, Scotty. We'll be everywhere in and around
www.bitemeat.com.
Would like to suggest a topic? Send us your comments or are interested in becoming a panel member? Email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network. Music.podshow.com. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time when the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same. Bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Around Comics is a Pipe Dream production. Copyright 2007, all rights reserved. Love you, baby. Yeah. Why you got my love and left me alone? Why you got my love alone? I know that you don't love me. Oh, baby, what is going on? Let me, oh, let me, baby, love you one more time.
Tom?
Hello.
Hello.
Sal?
Hello.
Hello.
And Scotty Young?
Hi. What's that?
Scotty Young.
Scotty.
Yes.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
I don't know. Do you know Scotty's work at all?
I don't.
Okay. Well, fuck you then, Greg.
Yeah, see, I knew I was going to be sorry I said that.
I'm kidding.